Okay, so we're studying in right now in 2 Chronicles chapter 23, and we have a parallel chapter in 2 Kings chapter 11 that we haven't started to look at, but that we will go to shortly here in our study this morning, Lord willing. But in 2 Chronicles chapter 23, this chapter is, just to review for a moment, is recording events about after the death of Ahaziah, the king of Judah. And as we know, he was the son of Jehoram. He was the grandson of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat was a righteous king in Judah, but Jehoshaphat had married his son to Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab, in making a covenant of peace with the house of Ahab, with that northern kingdom of Israel, as there had been conflict warfare between the southern kingdom of Judah and the northern king with the ten tribes ruled by their kings from the time of Solomon's death, when there was Rehoboam, Solomon's son, that ruled over Judah and Benjamin with them. But the other ten tribes ruled by Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, but they were in conflict with each other from that time when the kingdom divided up until Jehoshaphat's days, and so he made peace with them by marrying his son to the daughter of Ahab, and of course that was a wicked family, and the conflict that existed there really by this time represented a spiritual division. You had Jehoshaphat and the kingdom of Judah who were walking after the commandments of the Lord, and you had the northern kingdom of Israel that was in full rebellion against God had forsaken him, and they were worshiping those golden calves that Jeroboam had made and following that religion that he established in his kingdom that was not from God. And then, of course, under Ahab, with Jezebel, she had brought in Baal worship that had spread throughout the kingdom. And that's what Jehoram married into, and that's what he learned and what he followed. He was converted to those ways. So their son, the son of Jehoram and Athaliah, was Ahaziah. And when he became king of Judah, he had been instructed in those wicked ways of the house of Ahab, and he followed them. Well, he was killed by Jehu, the son of Nimshi, that had been anointed as the next king of Israel, and that was by God's plan, and God had designated him to be the next king of the northern kingdom of Israel and to be the Lord's instrument of destruction on the house of Ahab for all of their wickedness, and he did that. So he destroyed the house of Ahab, all that remained of his family, including his son that was reigning over the kingdom, the northern kingdom of Israel at that time, who was also named Jehoram. But he killed him and Ahaziah, the king of Judah, both kings in one day. Then he reigned over Israel. But he killed the rest of Ahab's family and then destroyed Baal worship in Israel. Now, he continued in those sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and so he didn't follow the Lord, but those were the circumstances then that led to Jehu becoming king in Israel. But now there is a vacancy on the throne in Judah. Who would be the next king then in Judah? Well, we would expect that it would be a son of Ahaziah. However, Ahaziah's mother was still around, Athaliah, and she had designs on the kingdom for herself. So, as we read in 2 Chronicles chapter 22, she destroyed the seed royal. She killed all of her grandchildren, all the heirs to the throne, or at least she thought she did. She had instructed her servants to do that, and they did, except there was one that was saved alive that she didn't know about and was hidden by Jehoshabeth, who was a sister of Ahaziah. So Joash, the one that remained of Ahaziah's sons, the only one left, who was an infant at the time, was saved by his aunt, his paternal aunt, Jehoshabeth, who was married to Jehoiada, who was the high priest of Israel at the time. And he was a very righteous man. This was obviously a righteous man and woman that saved Joash, and they brought him up. They raised him up. Well, they hid him for 6 years, and until his seventh year, they'd hidden him in the temple, and his existence was not known by anyone outside of themselves and his nurse, and it was a select few, and so that was kept a secret until his seventh year. So Athaliah reigned as queen, not authorized by God, but she made herself queen for 6 years, reigning over Judah. So she was certainly a wicked woman, an astoundingly wicked woman, to do that, to wipe out her own grandchildren. She did that in order to have power over the throne. Well, after that time, after those 6 years were over, Joash, now seven, Jehoiada arranges for the army to support Joash being made king. And he has the army, he has the chief fathers of all the families in the kingdom of Judah. So he has the elders of the people. So he has all of the support that is necessary, and then he puts into action the plan with his men to protect Joash, and then also to apprehend Athaliah. And so that plan was brought to pass. That's where we finished up last week in verse 13 in 2 Chronicles 23, when they brought him out and had him made king, had the crown placed on his head in 2 Chronicles 23:11, and Jehoiada and his sons anointed him and said, God save the king. And in verse 12, when Athaliah heard the noise of the people running and praising the king, she came to the people into the house of the Lord, and she looked, and behold, the king stood at his pillar at the entering in, and the princes and the trumpets by the king, and all the people of the land rejoiced and sounded with trumpets, also the singers with instruments of music and such as taught to sing praise. Then Athaliah rent her clothes and said, treason, treason. So she was accusing all the people there who made the rightful heir to the throne to be king instead of herself, who had usurped authority. Who was the one actually guilty of treason? How about the one that had killed her grandchildren and tried to wipe out all of her son's descendants so that she could be queen when she had no authority to do that? That was treason. So she's accusing them of doing what she had actually done. They are restoring the throne to the rightful heir, Ahaziah's son, Joash. And so in verse 14, it says, then Jehoiada the priest brought out the captains of hundreds that were set over the host and said unto them, have her forth of the ranges, and whoso followeth her, let him be slain with the sword. For the priest said, slay her not in the house of the Lord. So they laid hands on her, and when she was come to the entering of the horse gate by the king's house, they slew her there. So there's Athaliah's end. So she was killed because of what she had done, all of her wickedness. She had murdered her own family, made herself queen, and had no authority for any of that. She was guilty of treason. And so after 6 years of her reign, now things were made right with Joash, the rightful heir to the throne, now as king. So the line of succession has been restored to the descendants of David to rule over Judah. It was not God's intention for this Athaliah of who was a descendant of the house of Omri and Ahab to be the one to reign over Judah and to establish a new dynasty there. That would have, if that had been able to remain or to succeed, and then all of and then that family to rule, whoever would have succeeded her. now that she's killed her own descendants, but it would have been within her family if she had been successful. The house of Ahab would have reigned over both kingdoms. Well, except for they were wiped out by Jehu, so they would, that would have left an interesting situation. Perhaps there were some other, who knows. But anyway, it was not going to be according to God's plans because the Lord had established that David, that he would be, his throne would be established in Judah and remain there, and that his son, God's son, Jesus Christ, would ultimately inherit that throne and reign over that throne, that spiritual throne of David, over the spiritual kingdom of God, which is his church, which is what he's doing today. And we are that kingdom under his reign today. So how could that have all come to pass by God's plans that were according to his eternal purposes and what had been prophesied from the beginning, going all the way back to the book of Genesis? How could that have all been fulfilled if Athaliah had succeeded? So what she did was wrong, and she was killed for that. So now Joash he's the 7-year-old son of Ahaziah, who is now king of Judah. So let's go over to 2 Kings to chapter 11, and we want to read the account as it is given here in 2 Kings that follows what we have just read in 2 Chronicles 23 up to this point. So where we finished up with verse 15 in 2 Chronicles 23, we'll see that matches up very close to line by line, word by word, in the first 16 verses of 2 Kings 11. So we start there, verse 1, 2 Kings chapter 11, verse 1 says, "And when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the seed royal." So there's that great sin of hers recorded here again in 2 Kings 11, 1. It says, verse 2, "But Jehosheba," so that's obviously a shortened version of Jehoshabeath as it was given in 2 Chronicles, "the daughter of King Joram," which is a shortened version of Jehoram. So these names, much like we have with many of our names, you have the longer forms and in a shortened form. But Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons which were slain. And they hid him, even him and his nurse, in the bedchamber from Athaliah, so that he was not slain. And he was with her, hid in the house of the Lord 6 years. And Athaliah did reign over the land." So this was a very dark period, those 6 years, with Athaliah, that wicked woman, reigning over Judah. In verse 4, it says, "In the seventh year, Jehoiada sent and fetched the rulers over hundreds, with the captains and the guard, and brought them to him into the house of the Lord, and made a covenant with them, and took an oath of them in the house of the Lord, and showed them the king's son." So here are the rulers. These are the military leaders, and so these are the ones that would command the following of the soldiers in the land. And as we, when we were reading the account of this in 2 Chronicles 22 last week, as we noted there, or chapter 23 rather, as we noted in our study there, if Jehoiada is going to succeed in having Athaliah removed from the throne and having it restored to Ahaziah's descendants through Joash, the remaining son of his that he's hidden away, if he's going to succeed in this plan to do that, well, how is that going to happen if he does not have the support, the backing of the army? I mean, that's ultimately will be what holds sway really in any land, isn't it true? I mean, when there's some conflict or dispute over rulership of a land, I mean, whoever the army backs is really going to be where the power is going to remain, isn't it? And that was the case there. So Jehoiada very wisely went first to these ones who were the rulers over and captains over the over the soldiers and made a covenant with them. And they took an oath, and he showed them the king's son. So not just telling them, here he is, this is Ahaziah's son. Well, as we also noted last week in looking at this, could there be a more persuasive argument? I mean, here he's presented the actual son of the previous king who had been killed by Jehu, with all of his siblings murdered by his grandmother, the woman who has now put herself on the throne. As far as an argument for having the right to rule, who's got the stronger case here? I mean, it's all the strength is on one side. Athaliah has no rightful claim to ruling as she's been doing. We can understand why these rulers and captains would enter into this covenant and take this oath that they were going to they were swearing their allegiance to Joash as to be the king of Judah. In verse 5, it says, and he commanded them, so this would be Jehoiada, Jehoiada being the husband of Jehoshaphat. So he is Joash's uncle by marriage, but he commanded these leaders of the military, saying, this is the thing that you shall do. A third part of you that enter in on the Sabbath shall even be keepers of the watch of the king's house, and a third part shall be at the gate of Sur, and a third part at the gate behind the guard. So shall you keep the watch of the house, that it be not broken down. And two parts of all you that go forth on the Sabbath, even they shall keep the watch of the house of the Lord about the king. And you shall compass the king round about, every man with his weapons in his hand, and he that cometh within the ranges, let him be slain. And be with the king as he goeth out and as he cometh in. And the captains over the hundreds did according to all things that Jehoiada the priest commanded. And they took every man his men that were come in on the Sabbath with them that should go out on the Sabbath, and came to Jehoiada the priest. And to the captains over hundreds did the priest give King David's spears and shields that were in the temple of the Lord. And we saw that also recorded in 2 Chronicles chapter 23. And so he's taken their oath, but now he's also giving them those shields and spears that had belonged to King David. And of course, it's David's throne that has continued right down to the present, that Joash is a direct descendant of through the royal line and rightful heir. So there's a lot of symbolism to this, but also recognizing who is the chief or the father of this house that is ruling in Judah and continues to. But also David being the great king that he was, for these leaders of the military to be given David's own instruments in this manner, we can see how they would be very strongly on the side of Jehoiada with Joash. And so then in verse 12, verse 11, it says, and the guard stood, every man with his weapons in his hand, round about the king from the right corner of the temple to the left corner of the temple, along by the altar and the temple. And he brought forth the king's son and put the crown upon him and gave him the testimony, and they made him king and anointed him. And they clapped their hands and said, God save the king. And when Athaliah heard the noise of the guard and of the people, she came to the people into the temple of the Lord. So once again, this is how she finds out about this. She has not, this has been a successful secret that has been kept up until this very moment, which is the moment of truth. And so she has she has not been privy to this information that she has a surviving grandson that she was unsuccessful in having murdered. And now he's been made king in her stead. And we see the response that she had to this. In verse 14, it says, and when she looked, behold, the king stood by a pillar, as the manner was, and the princes and the trumpeters by the king, And all the people of the land rejoiced and blew with trumpets, and Athaliah rent her clothes and cried, "Treason, treason." So there it is again. That's what she reacted to. Now, what normal grandmother, in finding out that she has a grandson, her own issue, who is a rightful heir to the throne, who's now been made king, according to what he is rightfully entitled to, rather than rejoicing that her response to that is going to be treason, she considers that she has a surviving grandchild to where she's tearing her clothes in response. This is an uncommonly wicked person here, this Athaliah. But we know the family that she's from, and all of the wickedness of that house of Ahab. So you had Jezebel, and then you have Athaliah back to back, and two of the most wicked women that have ever lived here, right there, one after the other. So Athaliah cries out treason, which is, of course, a false accusation against these. It was a very true accusation against herself, and she pays the penalty for it in verse 15. But Jehoiada the priest commanded the captains of the hundreds, the officers of the host, and said unto them, "Have her forth without the ranges, and him that followeth her kill with the sword." For the priest had said, "Let her not be slain in the house of the Lord." And they laid hands on her, and she went by the way by the which the horses came into the king's house, and there was she slain. Who did she have to back her at this time? Nobody. And if there had been anybody that tried to follow her and save her, they would have been killed too. But she's all alone. She has no supporters. Well, how could she with what she had done? And now you have one who is a legitimate heir to the throne that is being placed on that throne to rule in her stead. And so she rightfully received the judgment, that condemnation, and she paid with her life for her wickedness. And so she did all that so she could be queen, and it lasted 6 years. Now, we were looking at the example of Jehu at the end of 2 Kings chapter 10. Jehu, who reigned over Israel for 28 years, it said in the last verse of 2 Kings 10, which we know, by the way, they counted would be actually 27 calendar years, but 27, 28 years, however you want to count them, that was the length of Jehu's reign. And as it said there just before then in verse 31 of chapter 10, that Jehu took no heed to walk in the law of the Lord God of Israel with all his heart. So that being the case, and that he didn't keep God's law, well, he did all that he did to destroy the house of Ahab to secure his kingdom, and then he got to reign over it, but he saw the punishment that came upon his predecessors for their wickedness and continued in the same sins, those sins of Jeroboam, and did not depart from them, didn't keep the law of the Lord. And so all of that, even though he knew who God's prophets were, he knew what God's word was, he didn't keep it. So he got to be king for 28 years. What was that? I mean, how much time was that really? I mean, how fast does 28 years go by? And then what did he have? Well, then he had an eternity ahead of him of torment. I mean, what did he make a wise choice? What did he give up for those 28 years of being king of Israel? I mean, he could have still been king and chosen to follow the Lord, but he didn't. Well, Athaliah made a choice in murdering her own family, killing her own grandchildren so that she could be queen, which she got to be for 6 years. And she obviously had no love of the people, no support from any of them, when there was one that was an alternative, the rightful heir to the throne. Then everyone supported Joash to be king. But for all that she did so she could have that power to be queen, that's what she coveted and loved the most, and she had it for 6 years. And then what? Well, she got killed there, and where did she go immediately? There are few that we could read about in all the Bible that we could express with more confidence that this person did not go to Abraham's bosom in paradise for comfort, for righteousness. There's the other side of the gulf in that unseen world where the dead go, where that place of torment, where we read about in Luke 16, that man who had been wealthy in his time on this earth that died and he was not righteous, and there he was in torment and flame and asking, begging that Abraham would send Lazarus over to cool his tongue with some water. Well, he didn't have that relief. Where has Athaliah been, and what has she been enduring now for the last 2,800 years or so? And what does she have before her for the rest of all of the ages to come, throughout all eternity? For 6 years to be queen over Judah, was that worth it? She gave up everything and did so much wickedness in a short amount of time for very little temporary gain in this earthly life that she got. That's it. So she made a very, very unwise decision for her life and where she would end up spending her eternity. She was not giving that consideration, very obviously. But that's what happened. Another very cautionary tale here of Athaliah. So we have plenty of these examples of the ones who didn't prepare their hearts to seek the Lord and to follow Him. And then they make these choices in their lives and follow the ways of wickedness. And then in a very short time, they leave this earth. They're unprepared for eternity. And like God told His people, Israel, prepare to meet thy God. And we sing that song, but that's all that was left. But when you're unprepared and you're going to meet your Maker to answer and give account for your life, and it's been wasted and not spent serving the Maker that we're going to answer to, that's such a sad and, well, that's the most tragic of situations. And what do people give in exchange for their souls? They'll sell their souls for not much. And Athaliah, whatever she thought she was getting for what in this life, she didn't get much, and it didn't last very long, and that was the end of that. So we have these reminders for us to think about our time on this earth, which we know is very short for all of us, and how are we going to spend it? Are we going to spend it and waste it, this very precious but short life on this earth, and squander the opportunities that God gives us to learn of His ways and follow them and prepare ourselves to be His servant forever and ever as we serve Him now, versus forsaking Him and then being unprepared? Well, the alternative, the right choice is to see all of this and make up our minds and have that will that we're going to do His will, that we're not going to waste the life that God has given to us, and then spend it in a love of this world and its pleasures, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life that are so brief. But instead, we need to look at those things that are eternal and prepare ourselves for eternity, seeking after our God to serve Him with all of our heart now. Prepare ourselves so that we can do that with Him in His dwelling place forevermore. So there's we can keep those examples in mind, like Ahab and Jezebel, Jehu, Athaliah, and so many others. Here's what not to do. But it was too late for her. And then after this, as we look at the end of 2 Kings chapter 11, verses 17 through 21, so after she's dead, and now there's no opposition to Joash to be king over Judah. Of course, he's 7 years old, and he's being raised by his righteous aunt and uncle, and they're bringing him up in the Lord's ways. And we can see the righteousness of the high priest Jehoiada at this time. In verse 17, it says, "And Jehoiada made a covenant between the Lord and the king and the people, that they should be the Lord's people, between the king also and the people." So the basis of this, so he'd already gotten the army. They had entered into an oath. They're going to be loyal to the king, to protect him and to follow him. The people are now being brought into a covenant that they're going to follow Joash as their king. But what is the basis of this covenant that Jehoiada is making, not just the leaders of the army, but all the people to enter into, that they're going to follow Joash as their king? What is the basis of that covenant? That they, not just that the king himself, but also all of them, that they would all be the Lord's people. That's the covenant, that they should be the Lord's people. And this was a covenant between the king also and the people. So this was between the Lord and the king and the people, and between the king and the people. But if without that connection with the Lord, then what have you have? So what kind of person was Jehoiada? He was thinking purely in terms of accomplishing God's will. And we think of covenants, and this is the way a covenant should be. An agreement here that the people are going to follow the Lord, the king's going to follow the Lord, and that the king is going to rule the people in righteousness, and the people are going to serve the king faithfully and loyally, but it's all based in that covenant with God that they're his people together. How many people enter into a covenant of marriage and they're only thinking about each other to whatever extent they might be and utter those words that so often we see are not kept on those vows? But how many people enter into marriage and it's a covenant between the husband and wife, but they're not thinking about that all-important, the one that is the actually bringing them together, joining them together as husband and wife? And if the house is not established by the Lord, well, then what do we have? So that should obviously be the basis of the covenant of marriage, that the husband and wife come together, but that they are both recognizing that they are the Lord's people and that they're going to follow the Lord's ways in establishing their house. And so this is very much a model for that, and in recognizing that in a covenant like that, that it's the following of God in his ways that's key to it all. And that's the key to our lives. Everything that we're doing in our lives need to be based on that. That whatever decision we're making, it's based upon the fact that we are the Lord's people. We owe our service to him. We're going to accomplish our will in this endeavor, whatever it is. If that's what we are thinking about and how we're making all of our decisions in life, well, how are we going to go wrong? You know, when we're thinking about who we're going to marry, as we've mentioned, or when we're thinking about our career, when we're thinking about where we're going to live, what kinds of things we're going to do, down to the moment-to-moment decisions that go along each day. Well, what am I going to do? How am I going to respond to this person here? What am I going to say to this person? Or if they do something to us or say something to us, what's the right thing to say back? Well, not just if somebody's not being nice to us or good to us, if they're persecuting us, that's another aspect of that. But even when they're not, I mean, if they are seeing our example and asking the reason of the hope that's within us, we still need to consider, okay, what we say to them or how we behave in front of them is very crucial. And the way we respond to things, the words that we choose with one another, and how we can choose our words and the things that we do to edify and exhort one another. But we have all of these choices in life, the ones that are what we might consider the big decisions, and marriage and career and family and all those things, which are, and those really aren't, we may have a one-time decision about, well, the person that we're going to marry. But then from there, there's all those moment-to-moment decisions that follow after that decision that are going to be involved in that marriage relationship and the establishment of the house according to the Lord and His ways. But if we're thinking right and we're making all those decisions and everything that we're doing every day, we're thinking about, I'm the Lord's. I'm His person. I belong to Him. And that's what that means, that they are the Lord's people. They belong to the Lord. And what they're doing needs to be according to His will in everything. And if that's how we're thinking, that whatsoever we do in word or deed, we're going to do all that we do in the name of, which means by the authority of the Lord Jesus, and give thanks to God and the Father by Him. If that is our mind, that we're going to do that, and we're thinking in that way, not just here and there, because that's where people can go wrong. If they comes to mind every once in a while, well, I want what's the right thing to do here? What would God have to say about this? If we're only thinking about that occasionally, what are we doing in between? And how many things are going to be going wrong, and what kind of a mess are we going to make of our lives and situations if we're not thinking about that all the way through, step by step that we take, and moment by moment. This is a very good example that we have from Jehoiada, but we see how righteous this man was. And we think also now, this is the man, along with his wife, who's the blood aunt, the paternal aunt of Joash, they're the ones bringing up this boy, this child. They're bringing him up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. When they're everything they're telling him, and from his infancy up to now, and past this, all the way through this covenant, Jehoiada saying, Joash, you belong to the Lord. You rule by the authority He's given you. You are on the throne of your father David, given to you by God Himself. David, a man after God's own heart. You need to follow the Lord and be a man after His own heart too. And all of your decisions and ruling as king over this people, it's must be for the Lord and by His ways. I mean, that's his upbringing, and we can see that reflected there. To think about that and see what verse 17 right here says, and then as we learn about what Joash actually did in his life, well, he's going to follow that. He's going to follow those instructions and follow those ways as long as he has the guidance of Jehoiada there. But sadly, as soon as Jehoiada's dead and that guidance is gone, Joash is going to depart from all that he was brought up to believe and to practice in following God. He's going to forsake the Lord and even kill God's prophet, who happens to be the son of Jehoiada, which would mean is his cousin, which is going to be essentially his brother, because he's brought up. I mean, he's been raised by his aunt and uncle, but they're really, in effect, his parents, aren't they? I mean, they're the ones bringing him up, raising him, and they've saved his life. They've done all of this and saved his physical life, but then have set him up with this upbringing so that his road has been laid out for him to follow the right ways for all of his days and be prepared for eternity. Joash has it all set forth before him for success as God defines it. He's going to forsake that. And so in this sense, we've seen Jehu, we've seen Ahab and Jezebel and Athaliah. But when we now see Joash, and how much does he have that's going for him, or that has been given to him as a blessing from God, that when he's choosing wickedness, how much worse is it really for him to choose the wickedness that he follows when he's had all of this, all of these blessings given to him by God with this righteous upbringing that he's had from Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat. It's very, very sad what happens with Joash. But after Jehoiada makes this covenant between the Lord and the king and the people, that they should be the Lord's people, well, what did Athaliah bring into the land as far as religious practices? What family did she belong to? And what was their religion? Baal worship. I mean, what did Jehu do in Israel after he became king there and had destroyed all of the house of Ahab? Well, he destroyed that temple of Baal. Remember how he used Jehonadab, the son of Rechab, in that work? And so they wiped out Baal worship in the northern kingdom. Of course, with Jehu, it wasn't because he had made a covenant that he belonged to Jehovah. It did serve his purposes to remove not just the lives of all of the family that was the predecessor for when he's destroyed them and become king himself, but the religion that was identified with them. So he's everything, all the vestiges of anything that was identifiable with the house of Ahab, Jehu got rid of. And we can understand his motives. They were not the right ones like Jehoiada's are. But when this descendant, this daughter of Ahab, is now ruling over Judah, and think back to Jehoshaphat for a moment, when he married his son off to Athaliah back in his time, when he's righteously following the Lord, as this marriage agreement becomes the covenant of peace between the two kingdoms, would it have entered into his mind as he's marrying his son to Athaliah that that woman is going to end up taking that throne that he himself, Jehoshaphat's ruling over right now, that she's going to do, she is going to murder his descendants, her descendants and Jehoshaphat's, the heirs to the throne, to make herself to be the ruler on that throne? Do you think he even considered the possibilities for what Athaliah was going to do? Of course, it happened long after Jehoshaphat's death, but she did that. Of course, God stopped it, and Joash is now king. But as a result of what Jehoshaphat did and with that marriage, well, it not only corrupted his son, Jehoram, and his grandson, Ahaziah, who was the daughter of Athaliah, but Baal worship got brought into Judah through Athaliah. And so what were the consequences of that decision that Jehoshaphat had made? That was, as we can see, that was a horrendous decision that he made there. It was a righteous man that made a grave mistake in his life that had repercussions that last for a long time. But Baal worship is now rampant in Judah. So what's going to happen when the people enter into this covenant made by Jehoiada the high priest, that they're the Lord's people, then what's going to happen with Baal worship in Judah? What needs to happen? What must happen? That's what does happen. Verse 18, and all the people of the land went into the house of Baal and break it down. His altars and his images break they in pieces thoroughly, and slew Matan, the priest of Baal, before the altars. And the priest appointed officers over the house of the Lord. And he took the rulers over hundreds, and the captains, and the guard, and all the people of the land. And they brought down the king from the house of the Lord and came by the way of the gate of the guard to the king's house. And he sat on the throne of the kings. And all of the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was in quiet. And they slew Athaliah with the sword beside the king's house. 7 years old was Jehoash when he began to reign. So it's off to a beautiful beginning, his reign as king. He's very young, but he has a righteous uncle who's bringing him up and starting off his reign with a covenant with the Lord that they're going to serve the Lord. The king will, the people will, and they immediately destroy the house of Baal and Baal's priest there. So they're stamping out Baal worship now out of Judah as it was from Israel. God's rendering judgment on all this wickedness that got brought into his land through Jezebel, but as it now was brought in through into Judah through Athaliah. But God has rendered this judgment on all of this wickedness. And we can see the opportunity for righteousness now to prevail. And for the years of Jehoiada's life, it will. So in this sense, I mean, who is the leader in Israel right now? during this time. I mean, Joash is the king, but he's 7 years old, and who's actually providing the direction and the leadership for the land of Judah? This righteous high priest, Jehoiada, is. And that leadership of his is going to remain there through the rest of his days. So at least because of him, there are going to be many years of righteousness in Judah. But as we're going to see from Joash himself, he followed the Lord, not sincerely, but because he had a very strong leader, and the one that brought him up, who was the high priest, who provided that direction, and he does not turn from that until that influence is gone. Back in 2 Chronicles, in chapter 23, in verse 16, we're reading the parallel now of what we saw to the end of 2 Kings 11. 2 Chronicles 23, verse 16, "And Jehoiada made a covenant between him and between all the people and between the king that they should be the Lord's people. Then all the people went to the house of Baal and break it down and break his altars and his images in pieces and slew Mattan the priest of Baal before the altars. Also Jehoiada appointed the offices of the house of the Lord by the hand of the priests, the Levites, whom David had distributed in the house of the Lord to offer the burnt offerings of the Lord, as it is written in the law of Moses, with rejoicing and with singing, as it was ordained by David." So he's restoring the proper worship and everything else by organization that God had given under in David's time. Well, this has been forsaken now for a while, at least since Jehoshaphat's time after him. I mean, we know his son Jehoram didn't follow the Lord, and neither did Ahaziah, and then you had Athaliah. So for quite a number of years now, Jehoiada, he was righteous, but did he have a free hand to make sure everything was when he had those wicked kings and then Athaliah holding authority in the land? Was he able to do all that needed to be done to make sure that God's ways were followed by everybody? He was limited for a time, but not now. Those limitations are removed, and he's going to make certain that everything is done the Lord's way. So again, we're seeing the righteousness of Jehoiada on display. Verse 19 says, "And he set the porters at the gates of the house of the Lord, that none which was unclean in anything should enter in. And he took the captains of hundreds, and the nobles, and the governors of the people, and all the people of the land, and brought down the king from the house of the Lord. And they came through the high gate into the king's house, and set the king upon the throne of the kingdom. And all the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was quiet after that they had slain Athaliah with the sword." Now with these events as it's described, I mean, how long did Jehoiada wait before he got everything organized to make sure everything was being done the right way? It was done immediately. And why? I mean, what was he doing all of these 6 years while Joash is growing up from his infancy to the point where he's old enough at seven where he can be made king, even though he's going to still require guidance from Jehoiada? But still, I mean, did he just waste those 6 years while Athaliah was reigning? Or did he use that time? Was he preparing, organizing, and had a plan together? Here's what was going to be when the right time came. Here was how things were going to be done in order to make Joash to be king, and then to make sure that everybody in the land was going to follow the Lord again like they should. Well, he obviously had organized and planned all this during all that time. And so now that the time is right, all of it is being brought in and brought into effect immediately. The Lord has blessed this man and blessed the plans that he's made in righteousness, and it will continue to be followed all of his days. So Jehoiada is certainly one of the great examples that we have in the Bible. We have a very bright, shining light in the middle of a lot of darkness here. What we've seen with not just the northern kingdom, but the last, ever since Jehoshaphat's time reigning over Judah, it's been you had the wickedness of Jehoram and Ahaziah, Athaliah, and Baal worship coming in. And then you're going to see Joash himself and all these other kings after him until Hezekiah. They're not going to serve the Lord with all their hearts. But we have this man, this high priest, whom the Lord has put in a position where he's going to have the sway in leading the nation for these years until he dies. There is a very righteous man that's in this position to lead the kingdom in God's way. So we need to remember Jehoiada. Lord willing, we'll see more of his good example next Lord's Day as we continue our study then going forward into 2 Chronicles chapter 24 and 2 Kings 12. And we'll try to continue there next Sunday morning, Lord willing. We'll close now in prayer.